Welcome to Torah Imecha, Nach Yomi, with the Older Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we will be studying Yechezkel, Perek Lamed, Chapter 30. We learned in the last perek that God will weaken Mitzrayim. This weakening will pave the way for Israel to turn to God as her source of salvation and lean on Him instead of the weak, wobbly reed, the Mishanet Kaneh, that is Mitzrayim. In our perek, the punishment in Mitzrayim intensify. Mitzrayim's fate becomes more dismal. The psukim describe the Yom Hashem, literally the day of God, a day of reckoning by Nebuchadnezzar. We hear in this perek the details of the destruction of the cities of Mitzrayim. The perek makes clear that God is the mastermind behind Mitzrayim's downfall. The destruction of Mitzrayim is orchestrated by Him, and as such, is part of the grand divine plan. The words Ko Amar Hashem, so says God, which introduce each of the sections in our parak, further establish this point. This is all God's plan. With this background, let's now take a closer look at the psukim in the beginning of our parak, and let's watch for words or phrases that repeat themselves. These are little centers of gravity, and help clue us in into what the Navi is seeking to emphasize. Here are psukim Bet and Gimel. Ben Adam, Hinave Amarta, Kor Mar Hashem Elokim, Helilu Ha Layom. Hashem says, Ben Adam, it prophesies and say, so says Hashem, wail Ha for the day of destruction. Ki Karov Yom, the Karov Yom Hashem, Yom Anan, Eit Goyim Yia. For the day is close, the day of Hashem is close, a day of clouds, it will be a time for the nations. You may have caught that, the repetition of the words Yom and Karov, day and near. This seems to be the Navi's way of making it clear that the day of punishment for Mitzrayim is right around the corner. But that combination of Karov and Yom, it happens elsewhere in Nach too. One example is the Nevuah against Edom in Ovadia. Ki Karov Yom Hashem, because the day of Hashem is close. But in our Nevuah of Yechezkel, there's actually an additional element that doesn't appear in Ovadia. Did you catch that word Anan in those psukim we read? The Yom Hashem, the day of reckoning, is mentioned not only as Yom Hashem, but also as Yom Anan, literally a day of cloud. God is employing the forces of nature in our parak. They too participate in the Chorban and its execution. And in fact, that word Anan will appear later in our parak as well. Uvatachpanes chashach hayom, b'shivri sham et motot Mitzrayim, v'nishbat ba'gaon uzo, hi anan yechasena. On the day of retribution, the day will darken. A cloud will cover the face of the land. V'natatu yeorim charava, even the Nile will be destroyed. In addition to the forces of nature, there is something else we learn about the Yom Hashem, the day of retribution. The last words in our pasuk tip us off. Eit goyim yihya. Notice the plural form of the word goy. The day is described as a day of reckoning and revenge. The plural form of the word goy, nation, seems to indicate retribution against surrounding enemies, not only against Mitzrayim. We see confirmation of this in pasuk he with the mention of the nations that were in a brit, a treaty with Mitzrayim, whose fate or resemble Mitzrayim's fate. Kush, the Fut, the Lud, the Chol Ha'erev, the Chov Uvnei Eretz Habrit, Itam Bacherev Yipolu. Kush, Fut, Lud, and Arabia, Kuv, and the nations who hold a treaty with Egypt will all fall by the sword. Here, the demise of Mitzrayim is linked closely with the downfall of nations surrounding her. The punishment of both is built into the same sentence. Similarly, in another pasuk in our parak, we have V'naflu somchei Mitzrayim, those who support Egypt will fall. By equating the punishments of Mitzrayim with those of the surrounding nations that leaned on her, Yechezkel seems to reinforce his point from the last parak, that leaning on Mitzrayim, or really on any nation, does not end well. Associating with Mitzrayim can only get you into trouble. Leaning on God is the only solution. So far, the parak makes it abundantly clear that the Yom Hashem, the destruction of the Mitzrayim and the surrounding cities, is directed by God. But God still needs some kind of earthly agent to make it happen, to preside over this judgment of the nations. In Pasuk Yud, we finally hear who that is, who God will choose as his executor. As you may have guessed, it's Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel. And it's not just Nebuchadnezzar. The Psukim teach us that the Babylonian king will avail himself of outside help when he destroys Mitzrayim. Hu va'amoito aritzei goyim huva'im l'shachet ha'aretz. Aritzei goyim, other nations, will collaborate with Nebuchadnezzar to execute this Yom HaShem. V'hiriku charvotam al Mitzrayim. They will empty their swords against Mitzrayim. This language, by the way, is reminiscent of the words of Az-Yashir, which were said in the aftermath of the splitting of the sea. These words describe the plan of Paro of old to empty her sword against Israel. Amar oyev arik harbi choishem oyadi. The enemy said, I will empty my sword against them. My hand will overtake them. So, to summarize, the retribution against Mitzrayim will be something of a global event. The punishment will extend beyond Mitzrayim herself and will include retribution against other nations as well. And it won't be just Nebuchadnezzar that will execute all of this. Other nations will join as aggressors against Egypt. As the parak continues, we get an enumeration of the many cities of Mitzrayim which will be the target of Nebuchadnezzar and his allied forces. Kor mar shem Elokim, va'avadati yulim, v'hishvati elilim minof, v'nasi me'eretz Mitzrayim lo ya'od, v'natanti yir'ah be'eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem says, I will remove the idols from Noph, and there will be no more king. There will only be fear in the land of Mitzrayim. Vashimoti et Patros, v'natati esh b'tzoan, v'asiti shvatim b'no. I'll destroy Patros and send fires against Tzoan. I will punish No. V'shafakti chamati al Sin, ma'oz Mitzrayim, v'yichrati et hamon No. I'll pour my anger against Sin, the stronghold of Egypt, and I will cut out the multitudes of No. V'natati ish v'mitzrayim, chul techul Sin, v'dno tiyel hibaka, v'nof tzirei yomam. I will send fire against Egypt. Sin will tremble, and No will be breached. Noph will be attacked in broad daylight. That's just a sampling. The list of cities continues still further. Broadly speaking, these cities seem to fall into two categories. Dat Mikra argues that many were hubs, centers for Avodah Zarah, hence the mention of removing Gilulim and Elilim when it comes to those. But there's also another category, fortified border cities that Egypt depended on for her defense against invasion. These two will meet their end. Maybe there's a common denominator between these two groups of cities, because if you think about it, both were more vulnerable than they thought they were. The idol-worshipping cities would have felt protected by their gods, and the border cities would have likewise felt protected through their fortifications. The destruction that will come to both reinforces the message that it is God who is at the helm here. Neither the idols nor that your fortification will help you, Mitzrayim. There is no kind of defense, earthly or heavenly, that will protect you from the wrath of Hashem on the day divinely appointed for your downfall. One thing that strikes the reader in reading this exhaustive list of Egyptian cities slated for destruction is the level of detail given here. It seems almost repetitive to those of us who don't know one city from the next, but interestingly, it's kind of really repetitive. Some cities are actually mentioned more than once. Noph, No, and Sin all get multiple mentions. There is a stream of consciousness quality to what Yechezkel is saying here, and that's nothing new. Starting from the Merkava in Perek Aleph and later in the description of the Ship of Tzor in Perek Chaf Zayin, Yechezkel describes things as he sees them and as he feels them, even if that may occasionally overwhelm the reader. The details aren't just dry facts. They help us vicariously experience the overwhelming nature of the vision that Yechezkel has in front of him. We are brought into his world, if you will. So, for example, relaying the details of the grandeur of Tzor's ship was Yechezkel's way of helping us experience just how great the downfall of Tzor would be. And perhaps in our parak, detailing all the cities of Mitzrayim that will be destroyed is Yechezkel's way of concretizing just how all-encompassing the destruction of Mitzrayim will be. No place in Mitzrayim will escape, not even the fortified border cities, not even the neighboring countries who have come to lean on Mitzrayim. By the way, in that web of details concerning the destruction of all of these cities, did you notice the point of view adopted by Yechezkel? Maybe that too is telling. The destruction of the cities of Mitzrayim is narrated by Hashem himself, so to speak, in first person. And the verbs keep coming one after another. Va'avadati gilulim, and I'll destroy the idols. Hishbati elilim, I've laid the foreign gods at desolate. Vahashimoti, and I'll destroy. Vasiti shvatim, and I'll punish. Vinatati ish, and I'll send fire. Vinatati yira, and I'll cause fear. This first-person point of view and the rapid-fire action seems to further reinforce the idea that while it's true that Nebuchadnezzar is coming with his armies, it is God who is doing all of this. Hashem is exacting these punishments upon Mitzrayim's cities. This leads really to the ultimate purpose of this Yom Hashem at the end of the section. V'yadu ki ani Hashem. They will know that I am God. The next nevuah in our parak takes place just 4 months before the Horban, the destruction of Yerushalayim. It's hard for us to even imagine what that siege would have felt like at this point. People were hungry, many dying of starvation. Surely they were looking for relief. These were desperate times. And the one nation at this time that seemed like they were in a position to help Israel was Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim had allied with Yehuda, who promised to help her. And in Sefer Yirmiyahu in Perek Lamed Zayin, we learn that Mitzrayim even managed to chase away Nebuchadnezzar and his men at one point. But that assistance didn't last. The weak reed Mitzrayim wasn't as dependable as the people had hoped. And as Yirmiyahu predicted, the Mitzrayim retreated, leaving Yerushalayim open to the armies of Nebuchadnezzar. The Nevuah in this group of Psukim, starting from Pasuk Chaf Aleph, will describe the downfall of Mitzrayim, and will use language that is familiar to us from the original story of the Exodus, Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Let's pick up with that final Nevuah in our parak. Ben Adam, et zroa paro melech Mitzrayim, shavarti, v'hine luch lo chubsha latet refuot, lasum chitul, lachavsha, lachazka, litpos bacharev. Ben Adam, I will break the strength, use the word Zora, of Paro, and it will not be healed. It will not be strong enough to hold a sword. Lachin, kol amar Hashem Elokim, hinanil Paro melech Mitzrayim, v'shavarti et Zoratav, et hachazaka, v'ata nishberet, v'hipalti et hacherev miyado. Therefore Hashem says, I will come back to Paro and break his arms, both the strong one and the weak one, and I will knock the sword from his hand. I will scatter Egypt among the other nations and countries. I'll strengthen the hands, the Zroa, of the Higa Bavel, and the hand, Zroa, of Paro will fall. And they will know that I am Hashem when I put my sword into the hands of the king of Bavel, and it is stretched out over Egypt. I'll scatter Egypt throughout other nations and countries, and they'll know that I am Hashem. So what do we have here? Well, that Shoresh, the root Chazak, shouts out at us. God will break the strong arm of Paro, the hand which is Chazakah. The Chizakti is a language we remember from the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim too. Back in the times of the Exodus, it was God's hand that was strong. God said he will take us out of Mitzrayim with a Yal Chazakah, a strong hand. But here in our parak in Yecheskel, what is being strengthened is the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Listen carefully to the grammar here. The Hechazakti, the extra he in the beginning of the word, slightly changes the meaning. Mitzvah David defines the meaning as, I, God, will support the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. God will break Paro's arms, strengthen Nebuchadnezzar's arms, and even support those arms. In essence, God is saying, I will allow Nebuchadnezzar to lean on me. The image here is actually a mirror of Mitzrayim's sins. Egypt portrayed herself as a mishenet, a reliable staff for Israel to lean on, but it was instead just a weak reed. You couldn't lean on it to save your life, quite literally. In contrast to that, the way God will destroy Egypt is by being a reliable Mishanah, a reliable force to lean on for Nebuchadnezzar. God will support the arms, so to speak, of this Babylonian king. What else do we recognize here from the story of the Exodus? What about the word Zroah? Remember, God took us out of Egypt, an outstretched arm. Not surprisingly, in our psukim, we also have the word zroa. The hands of Paro and Nebuchadnezzar are referred to in our psukim as zroa, or really zroot in plural form. God will support the zroot of Nebuchadnezzar, and at the same time, break the zroot of Paro. And there's more language that resonates with the Exodus too. Paro, Yechezkel tells us, will cry out, v'na'akna akot. It's the same language as the Jews crying out under the oppression of Paro, the Melech Hadash, back in the Exodus. V'yishma Elokim et na'akotam, and Hashem heard their cries. And one last connection. Back in the Exodus, throughout the plagues, God's constantly promised that he will take the people out, biyad chazaka uvizroa nituya. How does that eventually happen? It happens in Kriyat Yamsuf with the splitting of the sea, where Hashem told Moshe, kach matcha unite et yadcha al hayam uvkayehu. Moshe is to stretch his arm over the sea to split it. He tells Moshe to stretch out his hand, but God is there to support those hands. That's how God takes them out of Mitzrayim, Bizro Netuya. And here in our parak too, God destroys Mitzrayim with an outstretched arm. It's kind of like the way God leverages or supports Moshe's arm. But now God is supporting the arms of Nebuchadnezzar. V'yad'u ki ani Hashem b'titi harbi b'yad melech bavel v'nata ota el eretz Mitzrayim. Everyone will know that I am God when I place my sword in the hands of the king of Bavel and stretch it to punish Mitzrayim. One more time, there is a zroah of God that will become outstretched, and it will become a support, much as it was a support to Moshe when he split the sea. This time, God's outstretched arm will be leveraged against Mitzrayim. Now, the army supports is that of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel. But whoever God supports, Moshe or Nebuchadnezzar, Lahavdil, something remains the same in these two stories of the destruction of Mitzrayim then and now. What is common to both are the words, V'yad'u ki ani Hashem, the purpose of God's outstretched arm against Mitzrayim, once through Moshe and now through Nebuchadnezzar, is to spread knowledge of God in the world. The taking down of Israel's enemies will magnify God's name in the world. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Sender.